97.9 FM and 1360 AM WCHL and UNC School of Media and Journalism present Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examination of issues of overriding importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the Carolina campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, sexual harassment or assault charges against college athletes. Our guest, Lauren McCoy, visiting assistant professor at Western Kentucky University. Lauren, let's jump right into this. University of Tennessee, sweeping charges against athletes at that school by eight Jane Does. The judge allowing that to go forward. Is this indicative of what we see on college campuses across the country, this jock culture that you have written about?
I wouldn't say that it's indicative. I would just say more that it's highlighting a potential larger problem. Now, in relation to that particular case, it's not necessarily the athletes themselves that are being sued. It's the university because of the university's liability under Title IX. Now, whether or not there are criminal charges pending against those athletes, and in some cases there are, is a completely different story. So essentially from the university's perspective, the issue becomes, are they doing enough to prevent and then promptly correct issues of sexual harassment, which is why Tennessee is in the situation they're in right now.
All right. So help our listeners understand the difference. If you're suing the university because of the actions of the athletes, allegedly, what's the difference between whether they get charged as individuals or not?
The real difference is under Title IX, which is of the Educational Amendments of 1972, it essentially states that a university has the ability, has an obligation to protect and provide equal opportunity and access to both male and female students, since women are typically the underrepresented sex in an educational setting. It means that there's going to be more protections and liabilities put for or protection for those particular women. So in this instance, what the difference is that Title IX is going to apply regardless. A university has an ability or an obligation, actually, to investigate any sort of claim related to sexual harassment as soon as they find out about it, regardless of whether any charges are actually filed. So this puts a higher burden on the school. They can't simply wait for criminal charges to be filed before they have to look at any sort of allegations of sexual harassment or sexual assault. They have this authority to take an advantage and investigate these particular claims and provide that safe environment for both male and female students as soon as they hear or they're aware of any sexual harassing activities taking place.
All right, so let's talk about two complicating factors, and I'm sure there are many more than two, but let's concentrate on these two. Some women are reluctant to come forward because they might be stigmatized, because they're, let's say, they're going up against a very popular athlete, and you know, the university or others, other interests might be trying to protect that athlete. So let's look at the first one: women reluctant to come forward.
That is the larger problem. Going back to that whole idea of athletic or jock culture, it's essentially creating the system where it protects the athletes. Now, where the university or, say, even the athletic departments who, you know, are notified of these issues, they're not necessarily trying to protect their athletes. They're just simply responding to these allegations in the way that you would, say, if they, you know, those same athletes were accused of theft. These are the people that you see all the time. You're going to make sure that you highlight that innocent until proven guilty attitude with them. It just unfortunately happens to go a little bit too far, where you see instances where people are saying, you know, hey, you're going to ruin his potential career if you come forward. You should might want to back away from these particular claims. That's when it starts to become a bigger problem. What the university needs to do is establish specific procedures for investigation and make sure that all employees, including including all coaches, all athletic department personnel, are very aware of the process that is in place and do what they can to stay completely hands-off from it. You know, they can take the time to point their athlete in the direction of an attorney if they think that's needed or it's allowed under that process, but they have to pretty much stay out of it and also make sure that it's clear to other student athletes that they need to stay out of it as well, because that's really where we're seeing a lot of it, is that these girls, as soon as they file complaints, are getting messages from other teammates. For example, in the Tennessee issue, one of the Jane Does was a student athlete, and her teammates didn't want to hang out with her anymore because the male student athletes were basically shunning all of them as a relation in connection to what happened.
So let me ask you to weigh in on a couple of specific cases where it seems, and the reporting at least has been, that the women who reported, whether they were accurate or not, is I think irrelevant right at the moment, but the ones who reported were shunned, were threatened, were told, you know, don't go down this road. And that was Jameis Winston at Florida State and Sam Ukwuachu at Baylor.
Correct. Yeah, and with Baylor, Baylor has more of an interesting story, because Baylor, as it was reported in an ESPN Outside the Lines piece, didn't have a Title IX investigator full-time on staff until, I believe, 2014. Now, under the Dear Colleague letters, which are basically guidance letters written by the Department of Education to give schools guidance on what they need to do to comply with Title IX, there was a Dear Colleague letter that was written in 2011 that made it clear full-time Title IX coordinators were required back then. So to have that three-year gap causes a bigger problem. And in the case of Baylor, you had this kind of this continuing perspective where, you know, this the most recent incident was not, you know, an anomaly, essentially. They've had this history, kind of like what they're alleging with Tennessee, of essentially protecting these athletes and allowing, you know, this action to happen. I believe one of their student athletes, I can't remember his name, was connected to that Outside the Lines piece, and he is currently serving, I believe, a 20-year sentence related to one of the assaults that happened on campus.
Sports Focus. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Sports Focus and our discussion with Lauren McCoy of sexual harassment or even assault charges against college athletes. Lauren, we were talking about two particular instances when it seemed that women were reluctant to come forward, and we've heard many, many reports along these lines. You write, and I'm going to quote here, "One could argue the stance taken by the university depends on the talent level of the athlete or the record of the coach that ultimately leads to the ability to generate revenue for the athletics department." That's pretty strong.
It is, but, you know, at least from the current perspective, and it goes back to that whole idea of that protection, you know, instead of people, you know, there's that focus that we see on that athletic department. And, you know, there's a lot that can be said about how it ties into that public response. Typically speaking, the more successful an athlete is or a program is, and the more people identify with that program, they're going to do more or say more to protect those people because, you know, they identify with them more, versus if it's someone who could be considered, you know, quote unquote, an outlier of the particular program. Kind of a parallel to that would be when Patrick Kane, of the Chicago Blackhawks was accused of sexual assault just right after they won the Stanley Cup. There was a lot of backlash, against reporters who were just simply stating the facts of the story, saying, you know, this was an attack against him. So a lot of what schools deal with is that public backlash. You know, depending on how the public responds or how they might potentially respond related to particular athletes, it's going to color what happens. Just to show kind of from the reverse side, just this past semester at Yale University, they had an issue with a student athlete, a basketball player, who was accused of sexual assault. There were signs saying, you know, during their tournament stuff, stop protecting this rapist on campus, et cetera. And the school responded in kind, and he's now been expelled from the program. And it's contemplating a lawsuit basically saying that they denied him due process in relation to that response to the public's outcry.
Okay. So the question, I think one of the big questions is, are college athletes more prone to sexual violence than other, typically males, we're typically talking about males here, than other male students on campus? Or is it just that because of the name recognition of a student athlete, that case gets much more media attention?
It's the name recognition. There have been plenty of studies done, and none of them have been able to conclusively prove a link between student athletes or just athletes in general and sexual assault being higher. It's just more that the focus is on them, which is what is really the problem for these athletic departments and the universities, regardless of, you know, how there are. I believe at any given time, especially right now, there are 100 open cases at the Civil Rights Office dealing with related to these Title IX investigations and claims and disputes. Not, I'd say a very small percentage of them actually involve student athletes. The issue is that ESPN and Fox Sports, everyone's covering the ones related to those student athletes. So there's a higher focus, which makes it look like it's a stronger issue or a stronger case against student athletes when it really isn't.
Okay, so we were talking about one of the complicating factors being women reluctant to come forward. One of the other complicating factors is something you've mentioned already a couple of times, and that's due process. Some would say just because a young woman makes a claim does not mean that it's true. And there have been cases recently here involving the former wrestling coach's son, Corey Mock, who was actually attending a school in Tennessee, went through all kinds of stuff, and eventually, you know, that case was dismissed. So is the court of public opinion going too far in the wrong direction? Don't let this rapist be on campus when there's been no adjudication of guilt of rape against a particular individual.
Yes, and it does. Essentially, what a school needs to do is make sure that they're developing an effective procedure for those hearings to protect the rights of both the accused and the accuser, just to make sure that we're providing as fair of a process as possible. You know, making sure that they have time to present evidence, question witnesses, providing timely access to information, allowing them to be present, and then really where the due process part comes into play, say that final decision is against that student athlete, give them the right to appeal. And the more that we establish that process and procedure, the more we're meeting minimum due process requirements that would meet any sort of legal standard for those student athletes. So essentially, we have to be able to ignore the public appeal or the public response and make sure that we're actually handling this issue based on the facts present, not necessarily how other people are dealing with the concerns.
Sports Focus, we'll be right back. Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking about sexual harassment or even outright assault charges against college athletes with Lauren McCoy, who is a visiting assistant professor at Western Kentucky University and recently presented about this very topic. So, Lauren, if, as some critics claim, the pendulum has swung too far the other way in terms of if a male college athlete is accused, by golly, he's guilty. As far as the university is concerned, what has caused that pendulum to swing too far, if indeed you agree with that assessment?
I would say from that public response and perspective that, yes, it does appear to be that the pendulum has swung too far in the other direction. And a lot of that comes down to these reports or these issues become public, as you know, before the hearings are even completed. You know, if the schools could establish a process kind of like Major League Baseball, where when you have a positive drug test, you know, you don't hear about it until an appeal has been denied, and then you get to serve that opinion for the most, or that punishment for the most part. It's, you know, that particular aspect of it that can cause problems. So essentially what we have to do is kind of establish that courtroom procedure. And it's hard in this instance because we're dealing with incidents that happen during parties. People know about it, so there's going to be whispers and talks. But to fulfill our legal obligations, we have to make sure that we're establishing and highlighting that hands-off approach.
Okay, so here's a big question for me. If the university is supposed to investigate every claim, and as you write, how do we improve the effectiveness of sexual harassment policies, avoid legal liability, protect the victim, and provide appropriate process for the accused? We're talking about a staff of people who would have to be in charge of that.
Yeah, it really does have to be, especially on larger Division I campuses. You definitely need the staff because it's hard enough to deal with these claims as it is, and you just need that process in place. But also, every employee, the faculty and staff on that campus, especially those who deal with students, should go through Title IX education. Here at Western Kentucky, we had all the employees, faculty, staff, especially working directly with students, who did go through that process. And it was, I believe, about a 30, 45-minute online test with videos to at least make people more aware of what is and what constitutes sexual assault and what could be a potential violation. In the Yale case that I mentioned earlier, that was an incident where the Title IX violation was not reported by the potential victim. It was actually reported by a mandatory reporter on campus, so either a faculty or staff member who found out about this incident and thought it was enough to actually violate Title IX and create a sexual assault problem.
Okay, so let me make the argument on the flip side. All right, you have athletes who, many say, have been coddled their entire lives. You know, from middle school or even youth ball on, this kid's going to be a star. You know, let's really kind of bring him along. Let's protect him from the world. And you bring him on campus and give him a 45-minute talk about don't do this. Which one's going to win out?
Yeah, you're right to some extent with that. But I think, you know, at this point, there's still young minds that can be reshaped. And essentially, if we make people aware of what's going on, and one of the bigger issues is that people really don't understand what acquaintance rape actually means. Because if people think that if she has consented once before, that, you know, that automatically takes over any no that might happen. And essentially, you know, these are young students, and we have to basically try to highlight to them that they can be responsible members of their community. So while they've gotten that protection in the past, that doesn't necessarily mean that they can't learn from it and be leaders in the community that they're supposed to be anyway, or that we hold them up to be anyway.
All right, so let's talk about one other complicating factor, and that's incapacitation. All right, this came up in the Mock case. It's come up in several other cases. I mean, there's a PSA campaign from the White House about, mm-hmm. you know, if she's not able to say no, that, you know, that makes a difference. So I'm just thinking about this from a university staff person who has to gauge, you know, in as part of this investigative process, whether someone was incapacitated beyond the point of being able to say no. That probably means that the aggressor was also drunk, incapacitated. Boy, I think that's asking a lot of people who really aren't trained to do this kind of stuff.
It is. And it's one of the complicating factors that we deal with in relation to these issues. It's just, you know, the more that we do this, we can take the time to investigate. And essentially, like any sort of legal instance, especially with a civil lawsuit, the burden is that to prove that it's more likely than not that, you know, something went wrong. So you do have a little bit of flexibility on that case-by-case basis to examine the facts, see what happened, and see whether or not, you know, it appears to be wrong. Now, in that case of the Yale student-athlete, this is very kind of similar. I'm not sure exactly what kind of levels of intoxication were involved, but it was the same idea that this was the fourth encounter between these two people and what becomes no and what doesn't. And you know, they examined the facts, and the board found that it was more likely than not that he was responsible. So using and following that burden takes away some of this pressure to get it right completely, as long as it looks like, you know, there's something that went wrong here and following that kind of idea.
So basically, universities must fully investigate, but must also give the benefit of the doubt to the accused.
Yes.
And that does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Lauren McCoy. Thanks also to engineer Dylan Field. And as always, thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall at the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a service of UNC School of Media and Journalism.